We'll now join Governor Pete Ricketts for his COVID-19 response update on the city KCTY 98.9 1590 and online at WayneDealyNews.com.
Regard to the state's endeavor to slow the spread of the coronavirus here in our state and some of the other things that we have going on. I've got several people that are with me here today. I've got Todd Becker, who is the CEO of Green Plains. They're an ethanol-based company. We're going to give him a chance to talk about what he is doing with regard to his effort and his company's efforts to help us with the coronavirus emergency. I also have Jason Jackson, who is our Chief Human Resources Officer, as well as our Director for the Department of Administrative Services. And I'm going to ask him to talk right after me about some of the things we're doing with regard to our state teammates. I also have in the audience Tony Fulton, our Tax Commissioner. When we get to the Q&A part, we can have Commissioner Fulton come up and talk if he is necessary. John Albin, our Labor Commissioner, is also available. Dr. Gary Antone, our Chief Medical Officer, is available as well during questions and answers. I want to start by thanking every Nebraskan who has been working to slow the spread of the coronavirus here in our state. A week ago, the President made an announcement with regard to a 10-person rule that we have implemented here in the state of Nebraska. And Nebraskans all across the state have stepped up to meet that challenge. We've seen that events like concerts and athletic events, weddings and funerals have been limiting to 10 people or canceling. We've seen that businesses have been complying and working to keep their customers safe by having that social distancing and, again, limiting the number of people coming in to 10 people or less. We also saw last week that Douglas County issued a directed health measure, as well as the state of Nebraska, for not only Douglas County, but also Sarpy County, Douglas, Cass, and Washington counties. And this goes one step beyond what we were already in with the 10-person rule to close dining in restaurants and in bars, closing bars, still allowing for carryout package for bars, carryout delivery or drive-through for restaurants. And almost universally, we've seen just tremendous response. In fact, I was just at Qdoba, which is in Lincoln here, and not part of that directive health measure, but they had closed their dining and were doing takeout only. And they told me that it had certainly impacted their business, but they're seeing a lot of takeout orders. So please continue to support your local restaurants with that takeout or delivery or drive-through. But I just want to thank all the Nebraskans across the state that are making adjustments, whether it's people who are working together to be able to address childcare issues, whether it's our healthcare professionals, whether it's our first responders. Everywhere across the state, we have been seeing people doing the right thing. I had asked last week that Nebraskans use common sense and good judgment, and we are seeing that. So thank you to all the Nebraskans who are out there doing that. And I want to continue to urge Nebraskans that we need to continue to follow those good hygiene methods, right? We want to make sure that we continue to keep people healthy and safe. So, again, no handshaking, right? In fact, I think people even stopped doing the elbow bumps now. I think they're just like staying away, waving, doing that kind of thing. Absolutely, that's the right thing to do. Keep your distance, 6 feet from the other person. If you see somebody is sick, stay away. If you are sick, and specifically when I mean sick, if you have flu-like illnesses, right? You've got a headache, you got high fever or fever, you got upper respiratory, okay? So if you got those upper respiratory stuff, coughing, those flu-like symptoms, stay home. We need you to stay home. And especially if you're in the Omaha area, if somebody in your household has those symptoms, everybody in the household needs to stay home. Okay, we've got 2 cases of community spread, which led to our triggering of that directed health measure. We need people in Omaha, again, if you've got those flu symptoms, if you're sick, stay home. If anybody in your household is sick, stay home. Continue to make sure you're washing your hands often and washing them for 20 seconds at a time. Remember, we've covered the whole sing happy birthday twice. That works. Make sure that you're doing all the other things we need you to do with regard to coughing into your elbow or coughing into a tissue so that you don't spread that virus. It's absolutely important. We can all play a role in making sure we slow the spread of this virus. And again, the point of this is to make sure that we protect the most vulnerable people in our state. People who are older and people who have underlying health conditions like diabetes or heart disease or pulmonary or respiratory disease. All these factors increase the risk of having coronavirus and the seriousness of how that disease will impact you. So this is about protecting those folks. and giving us at the time at the state to be able to ramp up our testing, to be able to get more personal protective equipment, and also be able to expand our hospital facilities. So these are all things we are working on the state to do, and that's why we got to slow this down. And so again, I want to thank all Nebraskans for doing it and remind them to continue to do what you're doing with regard to practicing good hygiene and social distancing. Now, one of the questions that we were asked had to do with taxes. Last week, the federal government put out several guidance, several times they put out guidance with regard to filing taxes April 15th, or where they've landed is now you can file your federal taxes July 15th. Not only file them, but pay your taxes at that time too. People have been asking us at the state of Nebraska if we are going to follow the federal guidelines. In consultation with my team, including the tax commissioner, the state of Nebraska will be also following the federal guidelines with regard to July 15th. Now, this is primarily for people who are impacted with coronavirus. If everybody who normally files April 15th were to file July 15th, we would see $385 million, our estimate, move from this fiscal year to our next fiscal year, which begins July 1st. Now, we have analyzed this, and we at the state of Nebraska can manage that with our cash flow. We will be able to manage that. But I'm also asking, if you have not been impacted by coronavirus, and if you can file by April 15th, please do so. I will be filing by April 15th. I've asked my cabinet to file by April 15th. From a cash flow perspective, we don't know how this will all impact us from the standpoint of what will happen to, you know, sales and income tax going forward. Government is important. We do many important functions, and we are important in responding to this coronavirus. So having the revenues available to be able to do this is one of the things that if you are not impacted by coronavirus and you can file your taxes by April 15th, that will help ensure that we have the cash flow to be able to continue to run our operations here at the state of Nebraska. So please, except I'm going to file by April 15th. I encourage others to file by April 15th too. That will help mitigate that impact of the $385 million that I told you about that would get moved into our next fiscal year. If you got further questions on that, again, I've got the tax commissioner here to be able to talk about it. A couple more things I want to hit upon before I turn it over to our speakers. First of all, there had been a rumor about the National Guard being called out, and this was a national rumor, about people calling out the National Guard to enforce martial law. I want everybody to know that that is absolutely false, that that is not what we are contemplating in any way, shape, or form. We certainly are going to work with our National Guard and the resources they have there to be able to help support what we're doing to respond to the coronavirus. But we are not going to be calling out the National Guard or declaring law. That is absolute rumor, and everybody can feel rest assured that is not what's happening here in Nebraska. The second thing I want to talk about is last week we talked about waiving the requirements for things such as work and searching for work to receive unemployment benefits. One of our website didn't get updated over the weekend. If you're applying online, you might have seen that it was asking those questions. I want everybody to know that the work requirements are indeed waived, that if you filled out the unemployment application and were denied, that will be fixed administratively. So we will go back and fix that because those questions should not have been asked. It's fixed now, so it's not being asked now. But those questions that were being asked about, are you searching for work, that has been waived. You don't need to do that. If you filled out the application and were denied administratively, we will fix that. And if you were going through that process and you stop the application, you're like, well, I'm not looking for work, I guess I'm not eligible, please go back and reapply. We have waived those requirements. It was our mistake. It is fixed. Please go back online now and reapply for those unemployment benefits if you're, have been impacted by the coronavirus. Those work requirements are waived. So I want everybody to know that we've made that fix, and please, if you did not complete that application, go back and complete that. And with that, what I'd like to do now is turn over to Jason Jackson, who's going to talk about what we're doing here at the state of Nebraska. Like many businesses, we've got teammates that we need to make sure stay healthy and safe. We also have really important operations, essential services we need to supply to the people of Nebraska. All of our agencies have been working on their continuity plans. Actually, they had those in place for a while. They've been updated. We actually talked about this several weeks ago, about all of our agencies working to make sure their continuity plans were up to date. And I'm going to have Jason Jackson talk about what we're doing to make sure we keep our teammates healthy and safe, and what we're going to do as far as continuing to make sure we can provide those essential services to the people of Nebraska. So with that, Jason, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Governor. And what I want to do first is, on behalf of Governor Ricketts and the entire administration, just say how much gratitude we have for everybody that's currently in public service and all of our state teammates within state government in the state of Nebraska. The governor sent out a video message to all of our state teammates last week, giving guidance in terms of how to stay safe in the workplace, but also expressing our gratitude for their commitment to service, particularly in times like these where we have a public health emergency. That service is more important than ever because Nebraskans rely upon our services. As the governor mentioned, we're well positioned from an operational perspective within state government to respond to what we're dealing with. The governor directed during the first week of March that all of our agencies ramp up our business continuity plans, something that we've had in development for years, since the first years of this administration under Governor Ricketts's leadership, the directive that all of our agencies have business continuity plans so that we can respond to situations such as these. When the governor ordered us to flex our business continuity plans, he directed us to really have three priorities in mind. The first of which is, of course, maintaining essential services to Nebraskans. Again, Nebraskans rely upon our services in government. At times such as these, it's important that those services remain available and that our leadership is flexing to adjust to contingencies so those services continue to be delivered, even if they're delivered through alternative means. Second, that we provide for the safety of our teammates through social distancing, by having people who are sick stay home, just by using best practices from a sanitation and a cleanliness perspective, and flexing telework and remote work wherever possible. And third, that we provide for our teammates from their income security perspective. What we don't want to have happen as an employer is have folks who are providing for Nebraskans and are putting Nebraskans first be themselves vulnerable to income disruption because they're sick and out of leave, or their child is home from school, and so they need to be home caring for that child because schools are out. Those types of considerations are at the forefront of our mind. As an employer and under Governor Ricketts's leadership, we've made addressing those as a priority. So among the things that we've been talking to our agency leadership about is use every tool in your toolkit to make sure our teammates feel supported, whether that's sick leave, vacation leave, sick and vacation leave advancement, telework, working from home, or even just being in a paid on-call status and being available if you get called into work, but otherwise we're going to maintain, allow you to maintain your income security as you're at home because of some contingency affecting your household. Every tool in our toolkit from a legal and a union contractual standpoint is being deployed to support our teammates through this public health emergency. At the governor's direction, I've been in contact with the union leadership of our three largest unions. They've all expressed their support and willingness to work collaboratively with us as we deal with this. And what's more is their willingness to provide feedback directly to us from a leadership perspective, as well as working with our individual agencies on situations that might be unique at each agency. And there will be unique situations at each agency. We recognize that, you know, each agency has a different mission, different customers, different infrastructure capability. And so we're attempting to be flexible while meeting the needs of our teammates, the public, and meeting our mission. And so all of that effort is being brought to bear in the hopes of really striking the right balance, again, between delivering for Nebraskans, keeping our teammates safe, and making sure that they don't, in their personal circumstances, don't have unnecessary income disruption. So with that, I'll hand it back to Governor Ricketts, and I'm prepared to take any questions if there are any at the end. Thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you very much, Jason. And I just want to highlight that the people of Nebraska can feel very comfortable that there are great people like Jason, who's our Chief Human Resources Officer, and all the teammates that we have on my cabinet are doing a fantastic job in making sure they can continue to provide those services, that they're thinking about how to keep their people healthy and safe. We have a fantastic team here at the state of Nebraska that are working round the clock to be able to address this issue. And Jason's comments just are one example of how we're doing that. So we've got a great team here. We are working this issue with regard to the coronavirus. And Nebraskans can be assured that we have got the best people in the state that are on this. Now, another topic I want to hit upon is agriculture. It is Ag Week here in Nebraska. Now, typically what we would have done on Ag Week is I'd be going around the state highlighting a lot of the great agricultural producers, operations that really make agriculture our state's number one industry and make us one of the leading agricultural states in the nation. Now, obviously with the coronavirus, that is not going to happen where we're going to go around and visit a lot of different operations for obvious reasons, but I still want to highlight what our state's number one industry is doing. And so what I have here today is, as I mentioned before, CEO from Green Plains, one of our great ethanol companies, talking about what they are doing to be able to help address this. And Green Plains is just one of the companies that's doing this. So for example, other ethanol companies like Chief or Kappa are also looking to do the same sort of thing to how can they convert their operations to provide the things, the resources that we need here in the state to be able to do that. And when it comes to the ethanol industry, as you can imagine, alcohol can be one of those things. But it's also companies like Brickway Brewery in Omaha, Zach Tramert. He's also converting his operation to provide alcohol for things like hand sanitizer. So now I'd like to call up Todd Becker, who's the CEO of Green Plains, to talk about what his company is doing to help make sure we have the resources necessary in our state to be able to slow down and combat the spread of coronavirus. Todd?
Thank you, Governor. Thanks for allowing me to speak today. We're excited as well as a company because when we looked at what was happening around the United States and the world, we're seeing a significant reduction in gasoline demand because people are just going to drive less, which will have an impact not only on the farmer, but also the Nebraska ethanol industry and agriculture in general. And so we looked around our company and we said to ourselves, what else can we do? At least some small things that we can do to help. And so we have a plant in York, Nebraska, that for many years has been producing industrial alcohol to be shipped around the world for cleaners and solvents. And we've kind of looked inside of Nebraska and we said, well, this is one plant today that can make alcohol available to the state and to the country to use in hand sanitizers and other cleaning agents. And so we're happy to announce that tomorrow we will be shipping in partnership, in a public-private partnership with the Nebraska Department of Corrections, we will be shipping our first load of industrial alcohol to the Department of Corrections, and they will then convert that into hand sanitizer for their own use, but also to make sure it gets out in communities across Nebraska so there's no shortages at all, because we make a lot of alcohol in this state, and the ethanol industry and our company as well are there really to solve for some of those things. So while certainly we can see agriculture under pressure for a short period of time while we're dealing with this crisis, these are just some small things that our employees and our company is very proud to do and really help out in the state of Nebraska. We're seeing inquiries from cities nationwide to use ethanol as a base solvent as they try to disinfect streets and communities. And we're starting to look at shipping that as well. And we're working with the state on those things as well. The big thing really is breaking down red tape at the federal level. And that's what the governor and his team was able to do last week to get this product approved for use in hand sanitizers. And I think it's just really a great thing for Nebraska agriculture, especially in this week during these tough times. Thank you.
And Todd, don't forget, we got to highlight that you are donating that to the state of Nebraska. You're not even charging us for it.
Yes, that is true. We're going to donate that. Our employees are very proud of that. We are the largest producer of ethanol in the state and really across all of our plants across the country. This is one thing that we are looking to do for each and every state that we operate in. And if we can't get that product approved, we'll ship it from Nebraska there as well. So really, this is really going to help. We produce 55 million gallons of industrial alcohol a year at York. It's different than fuel-grade alcohol, so it can be used today, and it is approved today to be used in cleansers and hand sanitizers. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Todd. As I have said, Nebraskans all across the state have been stepping up to meet this challenge, and Green Plains Energy and the other companies I mentioned are great examples of how that's happening. And Todd, I want to say thank you to you and all your folks at Green Plains for the cooperation with the state and donating that alcohol so we can make that hand sanitizer. And again, this is just another example why I'm so proud of Nebraskans. They do the right thing. They step up. They meet the challenges. We work together. And that's how we will get through this public health emergency. We will work through this just like we always do. We will work together and we will get through it together. So with that, I'd like to go ahead now and open it up to questions and answers. And as always now, again, we're social distancing, right? So we're asking people to watch on the remote feed and send questions in ahead of time. So I've got a few questions here that I'm gonna address. The first one is from Fred Knapp at NET News. What can you tell me about consideration being given to using NU dorms as quarantine space? One of the projects that we have at the state of Nebraska is looking at quarantine space. So we've already had this happen, actually, for example, with patient one. She exposed a healthcare worker who had elderly parents at home. The healthcare worker couldn't go home, so we found her a place to quarantine so that she wouldn't expose her parents. We expect there's going to be other cases like that, and so as part of our overall plan for responding to the coronavirus, we are looking at quarantine space, and we're working with a number of different issues. When we have more information on that, we will share that, but that is something that is a work in process right now. Second is from Ryan Murphy at Kenny B. One of the big questions I have for the governor that I hope he can address this afternoon in light of all Panhandle schools closed until at least May 1st is what can be done to address working parents who have kids at home due to school closures. I'm sure there are plenty of parents who cannot take much more time off work while school would normally be in session. So what are they to do? Well, one of the things I think that we all need to do is think creatively about how we address some of these issues. One of the things that we know we have done with the 10-person rule is we've impacted daycares. And so we've asked them to limit, and we put out guidance on this from the state and the Department of Health and Human Services, we've asked them to limit it to 10 kids per classroom and to not have any of those kids mixed in things like recess or a cafeteria at lunch or anything like that to be able to help do that. But still, even with that, we know that's going to be reducing the daycare capacity, so to speak, in the state of Nebraska. We've asked daycares to prioritize healthcare workers and first responders and public safety officers like our corrections officers, but we are also looking at other ways that we can expand that daycare capacity. One of the ways we're looking at that is working with churches to be able to get them engaged, and we'd certainly encourage any congregation across the state of Nebraska, please reach out to your members, find out who is having challenges with this, see if there's a way that you can be helpful. We're going to be working to see if we can get some additional guidance out with regard to how churches can do it more formally, but you can still start right now by trying to find out who are the families being impacted in your congregations. Also, we want to make sure that we're working with schools and so forth with regard to this, so there'll be other efforts that we have down the road with regard to how we expand that child care capacity going forward. So I know that it's impacting parents. Another thing parents can do is work together. I know actually one of my friends in Omaha, she is working with four other moms so that they rotate the kids around the house, rotate the kids between the houses every day of the week. So each parent only has to take one day off during the week, and that whoever the parent is monitoring it that day is making sure the kids are continuing to do their schoolwork. You know, while our schools are operating without students right now, we are expecting schools to be able to work with their parents and their families to continue that education so that every child is prepared to move on to the next grade in the fall. And then my next question is from Bill Shammert from 1011 News, and it's related along the same lines. A massive financial burden for families is childcare. Many parents are being told to keep their kids at home, if possible, but also still being charged in the neighborhood of $1,000 a month for childcare they're no longer receiving. Daycares have to do this, otherwise they could go out of business. Is there any relief being discussed in this regards, either for parents or to subsidize daycares so they can give parents relief? I already kind of covered some of the steps that we are taking with regard to how we're addressing creating more daycare capacity. I'd also encourage those parents to, you know, work with your daycares, find other alternatives to be able to do it. The package the legislature is voting on today, in fact, they passed as well just a little bit earlier today, is specifically around addressing fighting the coronavirus and slowing its spread here in our state. That is the most urgent need, and that is what we are dealing with at this time right now. So with that, that's the questions I had sent in to me. So I will now take questions from the folks that are here in the audience, or you can also still text your...
Three questions from KETV.
Okay. Right, so I'll take that question first. So as you may recall, last week I briefed the legislature on a request from my office for $58.6 million. The legislature added another $25 million on top of that. I did not ask for that, but the legislature thought that that was prudent to do. It'll all stay in my understanding is the way the bill's going to work, it'll all stay in the rainy day fund until I, as governor, request those funds to be moved from the rainy day fund to the governor's emergency fund. And so that just gives us a little bit more cushion for us to be able to work with during this emergency.
What does this do for property tax relief this year?
What does this, so the question was, what does this emergency do for property tax relief this year? Obviously, a property tax bill will not be able to be passed until the legislature comes back from recess. Right now, that's uncertain when that will happen. I know we will all get through this. The legislature will come back, and we will address some of these other issues that we have, like property taxes. But at this point, our top priority in the state is going to be fighting the coronavirus. And so I appreciate the legislature's effort to be able to provide us with those emergency funds to be able to do that. That's what we're going to focus on right now. And when the legislature has the opportunity to come back from recess, we can address those other issues like property taxes.
And finally, David Earl has a question for Jason. As folks start to lose their jobs and overwork, is Corrections still hiring and offering bonuses? Is Corrections able to keep onboarding folks?
So, Jason, you heard the question. Please repeat it when you come up here to answer.
Sure.
Thank you.
So the question was, as the private sector workforce is experiencing disruption, is that an opportunity for state agencies and specifically corrections? I think the answer is absolutely yes. We're always monitoring the talent marketplace as an employer to position the state well so that we can have the best and brightest people in public service. Corrections is, of course, a priority. I actually have a call scheduled this week with Scott Frakes and with John Albin at our Department of Labor and our Department of Corrections, respectively, so that we can talk about strategies in as much as there might be other folks looking for employment opportunities, and opportunities at corrections might be a fit for them in terms of their career aspirations. So absolutely, we're going to be looking at that and bringing every resource we can to bear to continue to staff up our agencies, and particularly our public safety agencies like corrections.
So if I could just summarize that in short. So yes, we are hiring corrections. Yeah, Grant.
It's looking like a lot more states now are issuing stay-at-home orders, presumably trying to get ahead of it as this is going to naturally get worse. Can you talk about why you haven't pushed for that yet, and is there any point which you might?
Sure. The question was, other states and other cities have issued stay-at-home orders. Will the state of Nebraska be doing that, and why or why not? And the answer is no, we will not. We put together our plan with the world-leading experts at UNMC several weeks ago. And that plan called for us to be able to reduce those public gatherings, ultimately to get down to the 10 or 20 range. And the president issued the order on Monday last week, about a week ago, right, to 10 people. So the state of Nebraska is complying with that. We have also had those two community spread cases in the Omaha area, and so we have issued a directed health measure that applies to Douglas, Sarpy, Cass, and Washington counties to go to the most restrictive measures that we are anticipating, which is restaurants can no longer have dine-in, they can only do carry-out, take-out, drive-through, bars cannot be open, they can do take-out or delivery package, but they can't be open, and all public gatherings are limited to 10 people or less. And so that is the plan we put together with the experts at UNMC as how we were going to slow down this virus. Never did we discuss a shelter in place strategy. For our state, that's not necessary. We are well ahead of the curve here in Nebraska with what the president ordered last week and the steps we had taken prior to that. And we will continue to work our plan that we created before we got into, you know, all of the, what I'd say is a lot of emotion that was coming out. So we've got a plan. We're executing on our plan. And our plan is sufficient to be able to make sure we're slowing down the spread. And by the way, you know, again, we're just having more conversations about it because we do revisit these things with folks. Our original plan assumed only a 30% compliance to those social distancing measures. And again, you can see across the state, and I don't have any official way to measure this, but almost universally people are complying, that we've got way more than 30% compliance with regard to keeping groups of 10 people or less. Just go out and look. Go look at the traffic on the streets. You know, go to a restaurant. Like I said, it was just a Qdoba. You know, they weren't allowing any dining, even though it wasn't required in Lincoln. So we have a plan. We're working the plan, and we're going to continue to work the plan. Absolutely. So again, we've got the world-leading experts at UNMC. Remember, we've got the one of three biocontainment facilities, the only federally funded quarantine unit. When the federal government wants something done, they come to us. Recall when they were bringing back people from Hubei province in China and Wuhan, they went to military bases and Nebraska. They came to us because they know we've got the world-leading experts. We can handle it. We've got the experts right here that helped us craft our plan before we actually had to implement any of these measures. Paul.
Governor, you say we're well ahead of the curve here in Nebraska. What makes you say that? What metrics, what statistics tell us that?
Well, if you look at New York, for example, in the thousands of cases that they have, they are weeks ahead of us as far as the virus in their community. And probably, again, you know, who knows exactly, but it was really not even, when they were probably having lots of flights coming in from China, they were getting the coronavirus probably seeded in New York City long before anybody on his radar screen. Here in Nebraska, we don't really have that kind of interface with China. And so we didn't have probably that same sort of interface and the virus being seeded in our communities. So that's why I think that we are ahead of the game, because we are implementing these social distancing things long before New York did, relative to when they were getting virus in their communities.
Also, I've read that one strategy is to test more people, that you won't know who's got it unless you test more people. Where are we at with that?
Well,
do you think that is part of the strategy that Nebraska needs to ramp up?
Well, certainly. In fact, I've talked about that our strategy involves around expanding testing, getting more personal protective equipment, and looking at how we're expanding our hospital beds to be able, and ICU beds specifically, to be able to handle an influx of people coming in that need that critical care. So we're looking at expanding those critical things around testing, but our plan was put together based upon the idea we would not have widespread testing. Our plan was put together assuming we would have limited testing. And so we are expanding our testing as quickly as we can. Fred Knapp talked about last week about how we were supposed to be expanding the capacity in our public health lab. We started that procedure today, right, Dr. Antone? So we are looking at ways that we can be more creative as far as how we're pooling samples and so forth to be able to expand our capacity, because we do want to do more testing. But our plan assumes that we could not do that expanded testing. And I want to highlight that we are testing what we think are going to be the highest priority cases, right? So first of all, you have to be screened by your healthcare provider. You can't have influenza A, influenza B, respiratory panel if you're negative for all those tests. And you've been to maybe Asia or Europe or one of our widespread community spread cases like New York or San Francisco or Seattle. If you've been to one of those places or you've been in contact with somebody who's known to have coronavirus, those are the priority cases that we are testing. We've done over 1,000 tests now, and we've got 50 positive responses, right? 50 people that have tested positive for coronavirus. Well, that's about a 5% hit rate, right? Quick math. So even with those highest risk people, we're still only getting about 5% of the people testing positive for coronavirus. So we want to expand that. We're working on being able to do that. But frankly, the industrial capacity in the United States is going to take a few weeks to be able to gin that up so we can do more broad-based testing. So that process started today. So we will, as we roll that out and ramp that up, we will know more about how many we can do. But that's where we believe we are. And obviously, so we want to ramp up the testing more. We're going to be extending it to our first responders, police, firefighters, EMT, healthcare workers, and then folks in our nursing home facilities. Again, the people who are either going to be dealing with the general public in an emergency sort of way, or our most at-risk population.
We have a few more questions. One from Joe Jordan. What would have to change in order to further tighten social distancing in more limited groups?
The question was, what would we have to do to tighten the social distancing? We have no plans to do that.
William Padmore, the KLAN, says, will prisoners be used to make the hand sanitizer, and how are they paid for their work? How much? He's asking because Todd Becker said the alcohol was going to corrections.
Right, yeah, so Green Plains is kindly donating the alcohol to Department of Corrections. We have an organization called Cornhusker Industries that already makes things that we sell and employs inmates to be able to do it. So this is a process we already have in place. We haven't made hand sanitizer before, so that's going to be a new process, or at least if we have, it's not been in large quantities. But it's not something new for the Department of Corrections to make products and sell them. If you have follow-up questions, Taylor Gage can get you the specifics on the other parts of like how much are people getting paid and so forth. But this is not a new thing for Department of Corrections.
And then finally, Rob McCurdy.
So, and then Rob McCartney asked when we're going to be limiting travel to and from Nebraska. there's this thing in the Constitution called the Interstate Commerce Clause or whatever. We can't actually limit travel from other states. It's being unconstitutional. However, obviously there's guidance out there from a number of our public health departments that if you have been in these places where they have community spread and you're coming back to Nebraska, stay home for 2 weeks, self-quarantine. So if you've been in New York, you come back to Nebraska, stay home for 2 weeks. Make sure you don't develop symptoms. And again, the rule of thumb is going to be if you've been in one of those places and then you develop symptoms, you got to stay home for 2 weeks plus 72 hours after you finish getting over the symptoms.
Have you heard of any estimates of when, in Nebraska specifically, the curve might actually start to flatten?
So the question was, have we heard of any estimates when the curve may start to flatten? And again, really that gets back to being able to collect more testing data. So we don't really have a way to be able to test that right now. Obviously, that's our goal, is to expand the testing to be able to have better data on it right now. We're just continuing to monitor the situation with regard to those community spread cases, which is our rule of thumb for how we would take more restrictive measures in other parts of the state.
Did I hear, Jason Wright, you are paying some workers to stay home and be on call?
That's correct. So, yeah, we are paying some people to be on call at home. And, Jason, I'll let you explain that a little bit more.
Sure. So we have a process called a ready-to-work process, which basically is a paid on-call status. And what that contemplates is, you know, if somebody is ready to work, but for some reason they're not able to, we're able to keep them in a paid status so they don't have any income disruption. Full pay. That's right. So we, for example, we flexed that last year during the floods, when floodwaters prevented some of our workforce from being able to get to their work location. They were ready, willing, able to work. We just weren't able to provide them from a workplace to be able to deliver on their mission.
And the governor would encourage private businesses to do that. I mean, if people have run out of sick time and vacation time to take care of their kids, are you urging private businesses to do the same?
I'll let the governor respond to that question, but what I'll say is, what we acknowledge within state government is every agency is different. Their missions are different. Their infrastructure is different. Their customer requirements are different. And so that isn't necessarily a solution that's appropriate in every instance, but it's one tool in the toolkit for our leadership.
And with regard to should private businesses do that, I'd certainly encourage them to take a look at it. I mean, here's the deal, right? At some point, this is going to be over. And business is going to come back to normal. There's going to be a lot of pent-up demand. What was one of the biggest things we were talking about before the corona emergency? It was a shortage of workforce. Employers couldn't find enough people to hire, right? So if you're an employer and you're thinking long-term about how am I gonna meet this pent-up demand that is likely to come when we get through this coronavirus emergency, well, I'd be trying to figure out ways to hold on to my workforce, because if you let those people go, we just may hire them in the Department of Corrections, right? And then you're gonna lose opportunity to get that person. So I think it's good business practice for businesses to think about how do they hold on to their talent, because this will end. They will need those people back.
We had a caller who said they called to apply for unemployment benefits. We're on hold for an hour. Somehow the phone got disconnected. They called again. They were on hold another hour. Is there a problem with their phone system?
Well, so the question was, somebody called in, was on hold for an hour, got disconnected, called in, waited for another hour. First of all, I apologize to that person. We are experiencing heavy demand in the Department of Labor. We've gone from 34 FTEs up to 66 FTEs, or full-time equivalents, to be able to, you know, we flex people from other areas of our Department of Labor into that unemployment line. I would recommend that person go online. Go online and fill out the application there. Obviously, we will try to answer those phone calls as quickly as possible. But if you're having a problem, I apologize, but online is always out there to be able to address that. Yeah, we've almost doubled the size of the number of people answering the phones there.
How concerned are you about what kind
of... Okay, I'm going to go to the guy in the back, Grant, because you've asked a bunch of questions already. You're kind of hogging things. This is why we didn't let you in before. You ever think about that? So, yes.
This is a question regarding the National Guard. At what point do you feel the need to mobilize or utilize them? Just give us a hypothetical.
Well, the question was about when would I mobilize the National Guard, give us a hypothetical. I actually don't deal in hypotheticals. But what I will tell you is this: we are leveraging the National Guard now. We've got, you know, our meeting, I have General Bohack in those meetings. We're talking about how we can leverage the resources they have there to be able to help supplement the planning that we're doing with regard to this. So we are leveraging the resources of the National Guard right now. What I wanted to dispel was this idea that somehow the National Guard is going to be called out to enforce martial law. There are no discussions about that whatsoever. That is complete rumor, complete falsehood. That's not happening. We're going to, yes, we're going to use the National Guard's, we got a lot of great talented people there. We're not going to let that talent go to waste, but we are not, you know, declaring martial law in any way, shape, or form.
Governor, what should small businesses do that are maybe concerned about taking out loans during this time when they have to shut down, but they still want to stay around and keep the flow? What would you have to do?
Well, again, I think that the announcement last week that Nebraska has received our disaster declaration from the Small Business Administration is really a great opportunity for small business to take a look at. Again, those loans are 30-year loans, potentially up to 30-year loans. You can borrow up to $3 million for businesses at a 3.75% interest rate. Nonprofits can get the same deal except at 2.75% interest rate. So this is, I think, something that they should look at. I think also there's additional opportunities in the stimulus bill with regard to small business who may take out a forgivable loan if they keep people on board. So that's another thing to take a look at. Again, that's coming from the federal government, but I think those are some of the best opportunities. And again, I would certainly encourage all Nebraskans, please continue to support your small businesses, all businesses out there. Again, get the takeout from the restaurant. You know, support your local businesses. This is going to be a tough time for everybody. And we want to make sure that all of our neighbors have the opportunity to be able to get through this in the best way possible. So I'd ask Nebraskans, again, continue to do what you're doing, step up, meet the challenge, do the right thing, exercise common sense and good judgment, and support your small businesses. Yeah.
I'm kind of in that same line with Dave here. On the flip side, the home and family provider, a lot of questions coming in because of the social distancing, having to limit income from people coming in. So what would you recommend to them in terms of the loss of wages that daycare providers are seeing?
So again, daycares are small businesses. Again, we've issued guidance limiting what they can do. And I would ask them to take a look at the same Small Business Administrations that any other small business can take a look at with regard to getting a loan, helping them make it through this tough time. Also, I encourage all businesses, if you're having trouble, go talk to your landlord. See if you can get that rent delayed. Go talk to your, if you've got loans out already from your bank, go talk to them. If you've got an SBA loan, actually you can get that deferred, that payment deferred for a year. So go talk to the people like your landlords and your bankers and ask him to get some flexibility with regard to making those payments.
Dave Schroeder from Caribbean would like to know what kind of assistance might be available to the self-employed.
So the question was, what kind of assistance may be available to the self-employed? And again, I'd go back to the same types of business loans we were just talking about from the Small Business Administration. That's going to be one of your first things you would take a look at, including the ones I had just announced, the ones that are in the stimulus package. I also had a conversation with the Vice President last week specifically about this. Letting him know that while the things they had talked about with unemployment insurance and all that were great, that as they consider future stimulus packages or relief packages, they ought to consider what are we doing for our folks who are self-employed. So I would say continue to watch the types of packages that are working their way through Congress.
David Earl wants to know, is there any update on putting a moratorium on convictions like Iowa?
On evictions?
Yes,
so the question was, are we looking at putting a moratorium on evictions? And the answer is yes, we are looking at that to see what we would have to do, who has the authority actually to do that. And again, I would, as I did last week when we got asked this question, please, it's a public emergency. If you're a landlord, this is not the time to be evicting people from your household. Now, there may be, or from your buildings. Now, there may be some very good reasons why you may think you need to do that, but come on, it's a public emergency. Please remember we're in a public emergency. We can't be throwing people out on the street. Grant, you want to get back to your questions now?
Some of you just answered. Do you have any thoughts at all on the federal stimulus bill? I mean, how pressing is that to get that passed in Nebraska? And in fact, it's, I don't know what the current status, but it's gone down. It's like it's gone down twice. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, certainly I think the ideas the president's talked about in the federal stimulus package are important. Will tell you that I have not followed it or delved into details of it simply because we have got so many other things going on at the state of Nebraska that we're responsible for. As you may have heard the vice president say, you know, this emergency needs to be locally executed, managed by the state, supported by the federal government. So we've been very busy with regard to our response here in Nebraska. So I really haven't dug into what that stimulus package is going to look like. Paul, go ahead. Go ahead, Paul, you're good.
I think a lot of people just want to know where are we headed? When will things get back to normal? What can you tell people?
Well, I believe that we are going to get back to normal here at some point. I can't tell you exactly when. So far, we've been able to slow the spread of the virus here in our state, and that's a good thing. That also means it will last longer because of that. Now, we have taken the most restrictive steps in Omaha, but we haven't taken those in other places. As we approach March 31st, we will reexamine what we need to do, and certainly working in guidance with the CDC as well as our experts at UNMC to make a determination what will happen after March 31st in most of the rest of the state. Now, of course, in Douglas, Sarpy, Cass, and Washington counties, that directed health measure lasts through April 30th. So that will be through April 30th. And there's always the possibility that might be extended. But again, what we're going to do is review that and see where we are. So, but we will get through, folks, we will get through this. I have no doubt in my mind we will get through this. This nation went through this 100 years ago with the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918. And we came out on the other side of that as the greatest nation in the world. I have no doubt that we will get through this and continue to be the greatest nation in the world. All right, seeing no other questions, I'll go ahead and wrap it up. Again, I want to say thank you. Oh, did you have a question there? Or you're just, okay, okay. I want to just say thank you very much to everybody. Again, I want to reiterate my thanks to Nebraskans. You all have done a fantastic job of making the common sense decisions about how we limit those groups to 10 people or less. You've complied with our request to do that. You've slowed the spread of the virus, which is so important to protecting the most vulnerable in our society. Thank you so much. We need your continued work and patience as we continue to go through this emergency. But again, I know that we will get through this together. Thank you all again, and we'll be back tomorrow afternoon.
Again, you've been listening to Governor Pete Ricketts here on the City KCTY 989-1590 online at WayneDealyNews.com. Now back to regularly scheduled programming here on the City.